Okay, now let's talk to Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I mean, Lou's a Mr. Fix-It guy, not a home cleaning guy. Oh. I think I'm going to go with the John Williams on this.
Well, let's not vote, but thank you for that. Although, yeah. Lou fixes problems personal, home, you know, money, health. He fixes everything.
Oh, no, I've met Lou before, and Lou is marriage counselor slash carpenter.
Yes. Yes, oh, absolutely. There's nothing Lou can't make worse. I mean, better. What did I say? All right, let's talk about Friday's job report. What are you hearing there?
It's great. It's great. You get you add 315,000 jobs. That's called a good economy.
All right, that concludes our conversation with Tom Gimbel. Because, Tom, every day that we get a good piece of news, then there's always the flip side to that. And it's either inflationary or it's it's inflationary or it's going to maybe somehow impact interest rates. Interest rates are expected to go up again, maybe three quarters of a point again. So we're not out of the woods with a good jobs report.
But this is what people get lost on, is that the economy is so strong that we were able to raise interest rates and add 315,000 jobs. That is the definition of a strong economy. What would have been bad would have been if we the Fed increased interest rates and then we lost 100,000 jobs. That's not good. But what we have is a really strong economy. Now, I'm not saying it'll last for another 6 months or 2 years. I'm just saying that today, what we have is a very strong economy. People might not be able to get the job they want working where they want. However, there is a job for everyone who wants one. You can make a living and support your family. This is not a recession. This is a growing economy.
This is not a recession yet. I'm hearing that there's a lag time coming, that these interest rates will come home to roost eventually.
No, well, they're not coming home to roost. They're going to do exactly what they should be. And that means that money isn't free. And the reason that all of these technology-based companies could lose money quarter after quarter, year after year, and have a stock price go up is because they were borrowing money for free. Well, guess what? John Williams can't borrow money for free. Tom Gimbel can't borrow money from free. And now things are going up. Interest rates are still under 4.5% for a mortgage, John. 10 years ago, you and I would have killed for 4.5%. This is a normal economic climate, and things are good right now. And if we want to play Chicken Little and get worried that the sky is falling, people have been saying that for 4 years.
So as a guy who's very involved in finding jobs for people, business is robust right now?
Business is great. It's better than it's ever been. We are going to put up the best numbers we've ever had. We're going to place more people in jobs. We're going to help more companies. And we're hiring more people. I've hired 150 people this year.
Are people getting jobs for good salaries?
Yes, they are.
You make that sound like a stupid question.
Look where things are. You know, take away COVID and municipalities were raising the interest, or were raising the lower income jobs from $10 to $13 to $14 to $15. And Chicago, San Francisco, New York were having minimum wages at $15 an hour. Now, because of COVID and driving up prices, that now salaries are at $18, $19, $20 an hour. So on the bottom rung of the totem pole, you've got people making more money than ever before, and you have more people making six figures. You've got participation rates going up. And we can look at all of these things, but over the past few months, the price of gas has gone down, and you've got some drivers that are saying things are good. Now it'll really depend on, you know, when you've got the President of the United States saying in a speech that unions own him, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for the economy to hear. But we'll know if hopefully we have a normal, nonviolent, non-protesting November elections, and things in this country continue to be at a very steady cultural impasse, that we'll be okay and the economy will keep growing.
The president said more people support unionism now than in the recent past, and it's been a long time since unions have been as popular with the public as they have been, and unions helped build America and everybody cheered. Now, what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong. Those are all factual comments. What he said was, you guys were the ones that backed me, and you own me. It was I watched the tape. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And you know what? If any other president would say to elite white Wall Street people at a speech and said, "You guys launched my career 30 years ago. You guys own me." Could you imagine what would be said?
Yeah, that's a conversation for another day. I don't think anybody likes the idea of anybody owning anybody. Owning is the problem, not the who.
Correct.
There.
And
unionism. I was thinking about the Starbucks the other day and some businesses that you didn't think would be unionized. And it's interesting that the pendulum is swinging that way. I don't know quite what to make of it, other than maybe pre-pandemic, people weren't getting paid what they should. And now post-pandemic, they're like, you know what? I got you guys behind the eight ball. I'm going to start to exercise my union muscle a little.
Yeah, I mean, what ends up, everything's cyclical. And we've seen that over the course of the last 100 years in this country. And so what ends up happening is, the employees feel that they've got a little bit more power right now, and so that ends up happening. But all it takes is you get what people are afraid of, and that's a slowing economy and a recession, and people get laid off. And then the pendulum swings the other way. And what is really wrong is when either side exerts too much force one way or the other, it results down the road in bad things. And the days of needing a union for underrepresentation, you know, I think a lot of that's hard to stomach for some people when we're in America. What we should be talking about, union, non-union, everybody else, is why there isn't water in Mississippi and Flint, Michigan has lead in their water, and why the government isn't helping fix that, versus why a Starbucks employee who already gets tuition reimbursement over $15 an hour and flexible schedules needs a union.
We need to fix the situation in Dixon, Illinois, too. All right, I'll talk to you another day, Tom. Thanks for your thoughts today.
You got it, John. Stay healthy.
Tom Gimbel was on with us a minute ago talking about, among other things, unions. Here's the latest. I was referring to this. Producer Pete found it. 71% of Americans now approve of labor unions, although statistically similar to last year's 68%. It is up from 64% before the pandemic. And 71% is now the highest Gallup has ever recorded on this measure, at least since 1965. So figure 57 years it's been since union membership has been such a popular concept. Philip Weiss joins us now, the president of SciFarth at Work. Visit SciFarthAtWork.com. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Okay. So everybody's talking about firing, everybody's talking about quitting these days, and you have the flip side of the quiet concept. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, you've spoken on your show about this quiet quitting sort of viral phenomenon with people doing perhaps less than they used to do at work. Not that they're not pulling their basic weight, but they're really not going beyond in some cases, in some companies, in many cases. But what's being missed with this sort of hyper-focus on quiet quitting is a parallel phenomenon that we've been noticing and our clients have been talking about, which is those employees who have real ambition, real gumption, a drive and a desire to separate and distinguish themselves, have a rare opportunity to be viewed as what you might call indispensables in the workplace. And in some cases, they are taking this opportunity to step up and show managers their individual and career mettle. That's something that companies have said to us they're noticing with increasing frequency. So we've got this quiet quitting going on and what we would also call an opportunity for loud leading. That is, people to make some positive noise about their potential in the workplace.
How do you do that other than just doing a good job? Do managers notice, especially if you're working from home? Should you ring your own bell? What do you do?
Yeah, and it's a great question, this notion that if you're not at the work site, you can't knock on the door of a boss and make an offer to help. But frankly, we're seeing it both in the remote and on-site settings. One executive at a pharma company called me last week, and this is when we were thinking about this topic and getting a lot of calls, and said, you know, we've got some people clearly pulling back in terms of volunteering for new projects or pitching in during tough deadline situations. So whether it's someone who's doing it remotely or someone in the office, we're paying attention because these quiet quitters are really giving a gift to those willing to go the extra mile. So companies are paying attention irrespective of where you are if you make the offer.
Let's hear another example. You wrote about a Chicago cargo company.
Yeah, this is really interesting because the examples are remarkably similar to one another. In this instance, a company we're now working with that does cargo and distribution told us about a really savvy employee who in the last 2 weeks noticed that supply chain issues, and we know they are plaguing so many companies, were really starting to affect new customers more than ever before. And he walked up to bosses and said, look, can I help? I see the strain, and was told, if you can reach out to some of our new customers, explain the delays. And this employee was really both deft and diplomatic, and as a result, is now being considered as a future lead customer relations trainer. So the fact that others weren't making the offer gave this employee a rare opening, and the employee jumped into the opportunity.
Other than that potential promotion, how should managers reward these employees?
Yeah, well, one critical step is not to miss the opportunity and the moment to recognize and praise the employee. We've got clients asking us to train them on ways to recognize employees who are doing this. Obviously, you want to think about tying what they did to potential opportunities. So in one case, one employee offered to hand out, it was a potato chip company, offered to hand out potato chip sample bags, was not the employee's job, on the weekend because others were calling in sick, maybe quiet quitters, maybe not, and then took the information that the employee had gleaned about who was requesting which chip bags back to the marketing team at the office, and that resulted in a better marketing plan for local potato chip distribution. That employee has been thanked by the CEO directly, and they plan to bonus her extra in December. So whether it's compensation, recognition, or opportunities, there are many ways to let these standouts know that you're looking out for them too.
Philip Weiss is the president of SeyFarth at Work, SeyFarth, SeyFarthAtWork.com. Fascinating stories, Philip. Thank you again.
Great talking, John.
Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at Chicago NO. Let's talk first about Clever Carnivore. Jim, what's the story here?
Hey, John. Yeah, Clever Carnivore, perhaps as the name suggests, is rethinking how meat can be produced in this country. They are a biotech startup here in the city that makes actual pork, beef, and chicken using stem cell biology and bioengineering. So this is one of those lab-grown meat startups that's truly lab-grown meat. This is not the meat alternative like you've seen with companies like the Impossible Burger and other sort of plant-based alternatives. For me, what these guys are doing is creating the actual meat from animal cells. The process is actually similar to fermenting beer and how breweries work, but they're doing it with animal cells. And they just raised about $2.1 million and opened a new space, about a 4,200 square foot facility on Halsted Street in Lincoln Park, as these guys are looking to grow and carve out a little space in the meat market.
I got to look at that place. I know they've been doing this, and they've described it to me like you did, like a big vat with some auger in there, and then the cells are in there, and it heats up, and the cells replicate and grow the way meat would on an animal. But then I'm imagining globs of floating meat in there, and I don't know that I like that.
Yeah, it's the visual is kind of hard to wrap your head around, but for them, the visual of the traditional way that meat is produced for you also is not exactly appealing either, right?
Yep.
So what they're saying here is that this is better for animals, right? No animals are harmed in this process. It's better for the environment. The meat is cleaner. There's no pesticides and other sort of chemicals that are used in the traditional meat growing environment. So big opportunity here. Still certainly early days, but taking a big swing here from a Chicago biotech startup.
Clever Carnivore makes actual pork, beef, and chicken using stem cell biology and bioengineering. I haven't tried this stuff. Have you tried this?
I have not. So they're hoping 2023 to come to market. So we're still before anything has hit the shelves yet. So end of next year.
cybersecurity startup. Tell me about this place.
Yeah, this is a company called Coro. They're expanding in the city. They're a cybersecurity firm. They raised about $60 million earlier this year, and they're planning to grow in Chicago by the dozen. So they recently opened a Chicago office here, added about 40 folks here in the city, and plan to hire about another 100 by the end of the year. You know, it's a kind of a story of growth on one hand, while, as we've talked about, you know, sort of week after week, we've seen a lot of companies kind of scaling back. We're seeing a lot of companies, you know, not raise venture capital, maybe letting a few employees go. Really goes to show you that some sectors are indeed still thriving, still doing well. Cybersecurity, you know, sort of being one of those. I think it's a sector that, as we've gone remote, as we've gone work from home, has been even more important. And I think that, you know, we're starting to see, you know, that sector specifically kind of do really well. So, yeah, another company kind of continuing to grow in Chicago.
How about Relativity? What's this company?
Yeah, Relativity, a company founded back in 2001, really has become one of Chicago's pillar tech firms. They're not exactly an A-list brand name company, but really doing well. You know, they're creating legal tech software, essentially allowing law firms to sort of quickly sift through tons and tons of files and documents for the stuff they're looking for. They're used by about 198 of the top 200 law firms. The DOJ uses them as well. They just acquired a Chicago startup. A Heretic is a firm that they acquired here in the city, software firm for legal tech companies. And what I kind of like about this story is that Heretic was actually created by former Relativity employees. So they spun this off after they left Relativity. It was actually created for Relativity customers as well. So they complement each other very well. And Relativity actually invested in Heretic back in 2017. So now this is a company that's been acquired. So it really kind of goes to show you, I think, too, a little bit of the strength of Chicago's tech ecosystem, that, you know, a big company like Relativity can kind of spin off a smaller startup, which in itself can go and grow and do really well, and then get acquired by that business ultimately at the end. So nice little story for Chicago, and I think it goes to kind of show you the strength of the city's tech ecosystem.
Let's do one more, and that would be this venture capital firm Long Jump, who I understand all of the businesses that it backs are headed by a woman or a minority founder.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Long Jump launched back in 2001, really the goal to fund underserved founders, underrepresented founders. It's led by a handful of Chicago founders themselves to realize, like, hey, there just aren't enough checks going to Black and Brown founders in Chicago. And just last month, they announced that they've invested in their 15th startup. They totaled $1.5 million in checks written to Chicago startups. So some really impressive numbers here. They've raised about $5 million today. So more money certainly able to flow to Chicago's founders. And Long Jump, even in just a short amount of time, has kind of positioned itself as one of the early stage venture funds that's looking to back minority founders. So what's turned out to be, a great headline on day one is continued to be a good story, as they've not only continued to grow themselves, but are continuing to write checks for Chicago startups. So really great story.
Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoWinnow.com. Hey, Jim, always fun. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks, John.
We've got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. You'll be seeing more e-scooters in Chicago's Loop. Cranes reports Lime is doubling its fleet to 2,000 and expanding into downtown. The company received permission from the Chicago Department of Transportation for the expansion. Lime had to comply with rules mandating at least half of its fleet operates on the south and west sides. Lime, Lyft, Super Pedestrian, and Spin all have two-year licenses to operate e-scooters in Chicago. Until now, only Lyft scooters were allowed downtown. Illinois-headquartered State Farm Insurance is making a big investment in security company ADT. The company's making a $1.2 billion investment in ADT, which will give State Farm a 15% stake. State Farm will also commit $300 million specifically to help fund product innovation and marketing. State Farm says the deal with ADT gives the insurer the opportunity to provide smart home technology that takes the company from a repair and replace model to a predict and prevent mindset. Google is also expanding an existing partnership with ADT. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
And we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Pumpkin harvest is in full swing along the Illinois River, and we are approaching a major event in Morton, Illinois, which just happens to be
the pumpkin capital of the world.
But before we get to what's happening in Morton, let's hear it for Dwayne Nelson of Bellevue, Nebraska, who appears to have broken the world record for the longest trip down a river in a pumpkin. He grew an 800-pounder, carved out a cockpit, christened it the SS Berta because he's a Two and a Half Men fan, and to celebrate his 60th birthday, he floated down the Missouri River.
I figured 8 to 10 hours.
12 hours and 38 miles later, he had squashed the current record. But it wasn't easy. The SS Berta was
super, super tippy. I could have swamped the pumpkin any time during that trip.
Meanwhile, back in Morton.
Getting indication from our farmers and friends over at Libby's Nestle plant that the nice summer weather certainly has produced a quality pumpkin crop.
Leanne Brown is executive director of the Morton Chamber of Commerce, and this weekend the annual Morton Pumpkin Festival gets underway and runs through the 17th. Every kind of pumpkin-related event you can think of and fun for all ages.
We will have a family fun patch with a lot of great kid and family activities, no charge.
And a lot of pumpkin food.
Pumpkin chili, pumpkin pasta, pumpkin ice cream, and pumpkin donuts, and many other items.
Saturday morning, the 17th, is the big pumpkin parade, and
just prior to that, many, many people show up for our pumpkin pancake breakfast.
You know, Leanne, it seems like the Morton Pumpkin Festival would be a perfect backdrop for one of those Hallmark Channel love stories.
Well, actually, last year we had a Hallmark kind of version, Baking Up Love, and it was based around the Great Pumpkin Pie Bake-Off.
Yeah, there you go. Hollywood's been there. The 56th Morton Pumpkin Festival gets underway this weekend. It goes through the 17th. MortonPumpkinFestival.org for all the details. From the dairy farm to your belly, today's National Coffee Ice Cream Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
And now, Craig, let's talk about Pops for Champagne. Congratulations, 40-year anniversary this month, huh?
Yeah, 40 years in the city. It's quite an exciting time for us.
Tell me about that. So you're the co-owner. Have you been the co-owner all along? What's the history of Pops?
So Pops started up in Lakeview in 1982. The original founder, Tom Verhey, was with the business for quite a long time and actually sold it to myself and my business partner back in 2018 now.
2018, 2019, then 2020 hits.
Yeah, yeah, it was a rough few years, but we are excited to be on the other side of that and excited to have our doors completely reopened to everyone and enjoying our passion for champagne.
And so is it, I know the answer to this, but I'll let you answer. What do you get? Is it just champagne at Pops? What do you serve?
No, you know, we pride ourselves on, even though we've moved to the heart of River North, being a neighborhood bar. So we have a little bit of everything for everyone. You know, champagne is our main focus and our main passion, but we have a full menu of still wine, sparkling wine from around the world. You know, we like to focus on local breweries and, full offering of spirits as well.
So it's the 40-year anniversary, and a lot of times you'll see a bottle of champagne and you go, oh, that looks interesting, but I don't want to buy a whole bottle. I don't want to afford that whole bottle. So you figured out a solution to that here.
Yeah, you know, our solution is to, one, always rotate our buy-the-glass offerings. One, just as we work through different product, but to showcase new and exciting things that everybody may not be able to see or taste on a regular basis. So for our 40th anniversary, we took that a little step further, and we're offering some really unique, rare, and not commonly seen champagnes offered by the glass in celebration. So, you know, our countdown to 40, we've been popping open some of those rare and exciting bottles from down in the cellar and letting everybody have a taste.
Such as the 2006 Pierre Moncuy Cuvée Elizabeth?
Yes, that is one of our favorites. It's a really fantastic wine from a really storied producer. And you usually do not see a lot of vintage wines offered by the glass. So it's something we've been proud to do and showcase to a lot of different people.
I said that like I knew what I was talking about. So that is that's a wine, not a champagne?
Yeah, no, that is a champagne. Pierre Moncuy is the producer, which is also something we love to do at Pops for Champagne. We focus on a lot of the smaller grower producers. We love all champagne from some of your big name houses, Krug or Moet Hennessy, any of those people. But we like to focus a lot on some of the small grower producers that aren't as often seen, especially, you know, in our neighborhood with the big steakhouses. They're going to offer some more of those big, ritzy, glamorous names, you know, and Pierre Monquis, a smaller producer.
Well, what should I be prepared to answer? If I was sitting there and they said, hey, do you want to try one of these rare by-the-glass champagnes? All I know is dry or sweet. What else should I know before I order?
You know, that's the beauty of it. With the 40 years of history that we have the fortunate business realization that our staff has been there for a long time. Our beverage director, Michael Seward's been with Pops for 25 years. So that man's opened as many bottles as, you know, you and I can count. So as long as you're able to articulate, hey, you know, maybe I've tried Veuve Clicquot in the past, or sure, I tried Paul Roget and I really enjoyed that wine, we can help direct you in that, with that information into what we have by the glass that week that may be exciting for you. Or possibly, you know, I normally drink Pinot Noir. What should I drink? This week, I might recommend the Vatten Plateau, which is 100% Pinot Noir, but done in Champagne.
Or perhaps the 2008 Pierre Payard Le Grand Récolte.
Yeah, another fantastic wine that's coming from a small grower producer in a really fantastic village, Bouzy, where the fruit is really rich and provides some great acidity. So a lot of different exciting things to try.
I'm just saying fancy words here, you know that. So is there music as well when I go to Pops? And talk to me briefly about the Watershed, your underground speakeasy.
Yeah, so Pops has a long history with live music. Right now, we're not currently offering anything coming out of the other end of the pandemic. But we always have an exciting playlist based on the time of day to help, you know, enlighten all of the senses to go along with your glass. But Watersheds is super exciting. So something we're refocusing on and reopening. Watershed has a good history with Pops. It was open. It's kind of our speakeasy style cocktail lounge that's down in the basement. If you've never joined us, we're in the Tree Studios in River North. So a really cool historic building finished back in the 1890s. So downstairs, we get to focus on that history a little bit more. There's a really cool historic stone wall that lines right up against the red line. So it definitely has that very cozy speakeasy vibe.
You know,
so as we reopened Watershed here recently, you know, we have a new seasonal cocktail menu. And so Watershed is the previous name of the concept. And as we've reconcepted, we kept that name and focused on a different definition of it. So Watershed's the time of day after which programming on television is aimed towards a more adult or mature audience is permitted. So we took that and kind of ran with it. So each season is going to focus on a different TV show. We've started with a, you know, a fan favorite community. And we're just kind of playing and playing riffs off of that with a range of, you know, house-made cocktails. You know, different beer and wine. We kind of took our love for the small producers and focus on everyone across the world and represent some passionate farmers, vintners, distillers, and brewers. So we have something for everyone down in Watershed.
So the community right now is a Manhattan or is Old Fashioned or something like that?
Well, we've got a full list. So every episode has kind of its own cocktail from season one that we're focusing on. And one of the things that we really wanted to focus on downstairs was being inclusive to everyone. So if you look through our cocktail list, you're going to see that we also provide the alcoholic volume with every drink, so your ABV. So we go anywhere from zero ABV all the way up to overproof cocktails. So, you know, if it's a Tuesday evening and you're looking to take it a little easy, you can come in and have a, you know, an alcohol-free cocktail. Or if you're, you know, looking to just have that one, we definitely have something for you, you know, include some fantastic bourbon, brandies, mezcal, or anything of the like.
Craig Ruffalo is the co-owner of Pops for Champagne. Almost a million bottles popped since 1982, and in the month of September to celebrate, they've got $40 pours of unique champagne you would not typically get by the glass. It's an opportunity to stop by and sample the room and some of those beverages. Congratulations, Craig. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for your time, John.